This is the Lindell Report, bringing you news combined with hope by offering practical and achievable action points to assist you in defending and preserving faith and freedoms. And now, here is your host, Mike Lindell. All right, good evening. Glad you are with us. Brennan House in for Mike Lindell, who's out on business. We're going to be joined tonight by Michelle Swimick and a new guest, someone who's never been with us before. His name is Leo, and I think Leo's got some big breaking news for us tonight, so you might want to alert your family and friends as to the fact we are live on the air, tonight being November 30th, 2022, 6:04 p.m. Central Time. Michelle, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us. Hey, Michelle.
Sir.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Tell me a little bit about Leo before we get Leo on here.
Leo is an attorney from New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been digging deep into everything Arizona for quite some time. And he's been talking to Lake's attorneys and Lake and a bunch of other people before we even just went, you know, during the, before the election and then during, right? And then all because of the aftermath. And he's not hired by them. He's doing that purposely, right? And he filed a complaint and a TRO yesterday.
Temporary restraining order, TRO.
Correct, TRO for the election and then a complaint, which that one's a little bit lengthier, so I'll let him explain all that stuff. But the information that he's got, that he's been digging, that he's been making on public on his Twitter is all about procedural violations to these inactive voters, which there is, you know, as Mike Lindell, the anomalies, right? There's just been an incredible surge of inactive voters being increased. And some people have written some articles too about it. And that's where they've created a lot of disenfranchised voters that weren't able to vote. So there's so many layers to it.
Is this the article out today at Gateway Pundit about latency as well?
Yeah, because that came from somebody at the American Times or the American New Times. I sent you that article,
right?
The American.
Yeah.
So yeah, but he did a whole video on it on Twitter on Thanksgiving because he figured it out, because he was looking at, like, from 2018 to 2022. The low amount of inactive voters was 220. The high amount was 302,000. But magically, between April and the election, it increased to 503,000 inactive voters, that just doesn't happen.
Right.
So then that way, because there's a whole different process when it comes to inactive voters on what happens if they show up in the polls. So then they're actually able to vote. But depending on what the poll worker, because we weren't trained on that, and it's not mentioned in our training manual. It's only in the procedurals book from the Secretary of State. So it sounds like it's complicated, but it's really not. And it is it's really important, because you're talking about all of these voters that were moved over to an inactive list that were actually voting in every single past election.
Let me see if this fits with what Jay Valentine's written over at the American Thinker. This is a brand new article today. It's entitled, guys, will one of you come in and plug in my laptop, please? We're emailing him a Zoom link, so let him know. If you want to let him know, we're emailing him a Zoom link. But let me know if you think, Michelle, this is what you're talking about. This is a
Leo. He's going to send you a Zoom link.
This is going viral today, Michelle. I mean, a lot of people are watching this. The Gateway Pundits picked it up, but the source is Jay Valentine over the American Thinker, and it's titled "Here's How They Did It: Real-Time Election Fraud, Database Latency," a geeky term, but that's how they did it. A policeman pulls over a speeder. The police computer reports that 3 hours. The police report, my computer just jumped on me, hang on. All right, the policeman pulls over a speeder. The police computer reports that 3 hours ago, a similar vehicle and person held up a liquor store. So the police are on alert. No database latency. County election managers changed the zip code of 31,000 voters on September 3rd. Ballots go out that week. those 31,000 are undeliverable. Someone collects those valid ballots. On September 15th, those addresses are quietly changed back. National Change of Address Database will not pick up those address changes. They didn't happen because there's no history. The 31,000 citizens were getting their mail just fine, except for ballots. Ballot addresses were driven by the county mail-in ballot database, the one that was changed, then changed back. Many states send ballots to everyone. The recipient is none the wiser that they never received a mail-in ballot. They may vote in person. Oops, quote, you already voted, end quote. Ever heard that? Welcome to database latency. Our bad guy pals know they can change voter rolls, take an action, then change them back. Who would know? 1,000 voters are changed from inactive, voted, then changed back, and how would you ever know? With lots of complex footwork, you could eventually tell from their voter history file months after the election. What are you going to do about it? Reverse the election? The new and current ballot gathering strategy mandated by the almost universal mail-in ballot adds pretty cool database games exploiting database latency. Database latency, as you likely gathered, is when current reality lags the underlying record. We all experience it in our elections-driven society. The ballot gathering scammers know about latency. It's their ground game. Does this have anything to do with what you're talking about, Michelle?
Yeah, but the numbers are much higher. So he was just going over them with me, and he's calling in right now. So we had some Skype issues, so he's calling in through the Zoom. So he'll pop on here in a second as soon as Logan gets him. But as far as the numbers, like I said, by up from April to Election Day, the inactive voter roll was up to 503,000. For a four-year period, the low was 220 and the high was 302. Yeah. So it's a matter of moving the voters over. Now, we actually just by accident, one of the ladies that I met at the Capitol, this happened to her sister. She's lived at the same address for 30 years. And when she went to go vote, they said, oh, by the way, you're an inactive voter. And she's voted in every election since she's lived here. So like I said, it's a much bigger deal than that, because it mentions things in the Secretary of State's procedures, which I sent you guys that. And then, it doesn't mention in our training manual. So when he mentioned to me the other day, inactive, I said, I don't know what you're talking about, because you never got training on inactive. I said, no, when an inactive voter comes up, it's actually, there's a whole process that goes along with it, that they have to have copies of all the inactive voters at the centers. And you actually have to then go to the center that you're supposed to go to, which then creates this whole other layer, because now we have open voting centers here. And the procedures manual from the Secretary of State is written as if it was the old version where you had precinct voting, where you had to go to your precinct. So, I mean, like I said, this thing is getting, it is starting to unravel. Because if you actually just go off procedures, how are you supposed to have an election? And I know this people are like, oh, though, does it matter? Well, yeah, it does, because the whole election manual from 2019, when you're supposed to have it done every 2 years, because she didn't want to, Katie Hobbs didn't want to take certain things out. Gee, I wonder why. So she was like, oh, we don't have time to redo the manual, so we'll just use the old one. Well, the old one is for an old procedures and a process, which is totally different than what was happening live on the day. So that was the interesting part.
So are you telling me that you believe this current Secretary of State and gubernatorial candidate, Katie Hobbs, knows exactly what she's doing and is openly involved in fraud? Is that what you're telling me? Is that your opinion?
They all know. They're all part of it. They're all in on it. I've been saying that for the longest time, because you can't have, even that night, the different polling stations, the polling election stations, had different protocols and procedures that we were told to do. It was different. So that doesn't even make any sense. But it was also pre-planned, and the language was specific, especially when I asked questions, and I asked the question the second time, and the inspector's voice got louder. He said the exact same sentence. And almost got in trouble yet again. But it's what I'm saying. It's like, and in ours, we had a different process with the misread ballots versus the ballots that went through. We had to have two separate black duffel bags, as if you were going to the gym. So that way they separated the vote. Some other ones, they actually told them to put it together. Either way, that's not what the process and the procedures are in the training manual. That is not in the Secretary of State's manual. So how could each center have different protocols and procedures? Unless each center was designated, predetermined of what that center they needed certain amount of votes based on the demographics of the center. And each, and some of the centers had similar problems. Some, again, had issues with the tabulators moving, not having the ballots go through in the morning. Some had in the afternoon. Some was before the tech came. Some was after the tech came. So, I mean, it was, and some of the centers were almost identical. So one of the centers that was about 10 minutes from me had very, very, very eerily similar situation. And even the percentages, like when I was telling you guys, 90% of the ballots were not going through the ballot tabulator and 10% were for the first 3 hours. That was the exact same number that was in the 23-page report that the roving attorneys, should see all the papers I've had to print out. So this is the 23-page report that the roving attorneys had put together. The center that was literally not even 10 minutes from me had the same statistics. How is that possible? How could they? I've never talked to anybody there, and I didn't even talk to the guy who wrote the report. How is my numbers the same as his? And I said those the day of voting. Okay. And there's other ones too. There's 23 pages of it. And then, of course, what was the other thing too is the number one thing that nobody wants to talk about is the machines. The process is if a machine malfunctions according to the protocol and procedures, you have to repair or replace immediately. So within 15 minutes, especially at our center, you have a machine that's no longer working. Did they do any of that? No, they did not do that because they were waiting from instructions because of the situation to find out from their supervisors and then some as to what to do. Now, let's just say that the machine magically got better, like ours magically got better throughout the day without a tech being there. Tech didn't get there between 3:30 and 4. So what makes you think that the ballots that actually went through were being read correctly when you had a malfunctioning machine? There's no guarantee that those ballots that were being read on a malfunctioning machine were being read accurately. 15 minutes in, how do you certify that election? You can't. You can't. You violated a major procedure, not to mention Katie Hobbs needed to actually recuse herself according to the Conflict of Interest Statute 38-503B, which says that she can't be overseeing the election as a conflict of interest. So that was a year and a half ago that nobody apparently wanted to pursue. And then to 15 minutes in, and there's all the numbers they tell you for the amount of centers, you know, they're like, oh, it's only 30%. Maybe it's 40%. This attorney's report says it was 62% and they only visited like 110 centers out of 223. How much was it really? I'd say it was probably 85 to 90% of the centers. That's just tabulators. But I heard the Board of Supervisors, Gates, in all the videos that people are playing before their shows and things like that, said we didn't have any printer problems. But yet then there was another narrative going on, they'll call it the Lee Harvey Oswald era, where they were putting the blame on the printers. That's why they weren't being read in the tabulators. But then he said there was no problem with the printers. So if there's no problem with the printers, just use common sense and math, then the problem must have been with the machines. The tabulators. He said no problem with the printers. Okay, take that off. He said it. He's in charge of this. This is his jam. But the machines weren't working. So there's a problem with the machines. Huh. Gee, wow. That's interesting, right? And I'm just going off of his words. I like to use their words because they tell you everything. They tell you everything that you need to know. You just got to listen, right? And there's so much more that Leo has actually brought to the surface because we've spent about 25 hours together. Is he ready to go?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's take a quick break. Come back. Okay. We'll have Leo ready to go. Michelle Swimick here on Lindell Report. And I guess Leo's also going to be breaking some news tonight here, right?
Oh, yeah, wait. Oh, this is so good. All right, we wanted to surprise you. We wanted to surprise you and everybody.
Don't go anywhere, folks. We'll be right back after this break with Leo and Michelle in breaking news. Don't go away.
You're watching Lindell TV.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and I'm excited to bring you my Giza Dream bed sheets for the best offer ever. We're all experiencing rising prices, but I was able to secure a limited amount of Giza cotton for a great price, and I'm passing those savings directly on to you. You can get my Giza Dream bed sheets for as low as $29.98 with your promo code. They're the most luxurious sheets ever, made with the world's best cotton. It's grown only in a region between the Sahara Desert, the Mediterranean Sea, and the Nile River. I know my sheets are perfect for you, and I'm extending my 60-day money-back guarantee for Christmas until March 1st, 2023, making them the perfect gifts for your friends, your family, and everyone you know. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to save 50% on my Giza Dream bed sheets. That's as low as $29.98. Quantities are extremely limited at these amazing prices, so please order now.
All right, folks, don't forget those Black Friday sales are still going. Mike is extending them through the week. Brandon House in for Mike Lindell, who's out on business. And again, he is extending those through the week. Make sure you go to MyPillow.com. Use the promo code L77 to save up to 90% on those cyber. Actually, I was saying Black Friday, but it's Cyber Monday sales going through to the end of the week, up to 90% off. Use that promo code L77 to help Mike, fix 2020 and fund all that he's doing and keep this network going at the same time. Joining me now is Michelle Swinnick, and I'm going to be joined by Leo D'Onofrio. Hopefully I said that correctly. He's an attorney out of New Jersey. Leo, welcome to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be here. I'm now excited.
That's a picture of you. You're not really sitting in the dark in sunglasses, right?
No, that's on short notice. That was the best I could do. I'm sorry.
See, all right. This is Jersey. That's a Jersey attorney.
Me winning
like,
the,
who's got a guy who's got a guy.
Are you out on the boardwalk? Are you?
No, I'm winning in that picture. I'm winning a Delaware Poker Classic tournament there. That was a
tournament. He's winning the tournament, Logan. You hear that? The tournament. He's winning it. He's a true New Jersey guy, right, Leo?
I'm from Queens, actually. We live in New Jersey since the 80s, but I grew up in New York. I grew up right next to Trump. He was a Jamaica. I was Richmond Hill. I went to high school in Jamaica. I went to college in Jamaica. I went to law school at St. John's in Jamaica. So I'm right from that neighborhood. I know the vibe.
That's excellent. You're a colorful guy. I bet you are a great lawyer.
I love the law and I love the Constitution and I do the best for the people. I'm not practicing for a living right now. I did for many years, but I don't practice for a living now, but I do like to insert myself where I feel there's injustice and do my best. So
do we dare ask what it is you do for a living?
I have my own small, I'm an independent contractor. I'm just in logistics. I did play poker professionally until the Obama administration killed it with Black Friday and took it away from us. And so it's slowly coming back online. But I did support myself playing poker for a few years. I have a WSOP circuit championship. I won the first ever WSOP Turbo No Limit Circuit Championship at Caesars in Atlantic City in 2008.
You sound like Wayne Allen Root. You know who Wayne Allen Root is?
I love poker. I love chess. I love golf. I'm a games player and I love strategy. And let's get to talking about some of that right now.
Let me ask you, though, Leo, do you know who Wayne Allen Root is?
I do. He's the famous odds maker. I know. I watch him. I read him. He's very intelligent man as well.
I would think you guys would know each other. It sounds like you run in some of the same circles. That's interesting. Wow. We could do a whole show on that, but I guess we digress. All right, Leo, what are we been talking about something today. I don't know if you can see my screen or not, but there's an article. Let's show this screen. Here's the article over at the Daily. This is at the American Thinker.
Yes, I read it by Jay Valentine, and I'm glad. Let's segue into that because it's an excellent article. In fact, before I came on, I sent an email to Andrea and Olivia at American Thinker. They published my work before. I told them to have Jay Valentine look at this because this ties in directly to a video I did on Thanksgiving It's an odd little video, but this is the only, I was, you know, for the holidays, it's the only way I could do it through my, on my car with two phones. But I did a little sort of a lo-fi PowerPoint presentation, and I found something extremely interesting that ties in with that article that Michelle was talking about before. And it's quite fascinating. I actually have the numbers right here. But the reason I came to this is I've been speaking with, you know, we've been looking to the Kerry Lake phenomenon and this botched election. It's a catastrophe, and it's obvious that people are disenfranchised, and nobody could say that they weren't. I mean, you saw the pictures, the videos, the lines, and they're gaslighting people and telling them, you know, now they're trying to say it's okay. But on November 14th at a press conference, Bill Gates from the Board of Supervisors, the chairman, he slipped up, and he said that he's trying to blame the voters and the pundits because they didn't want to put their ballot in the misread ballot box. They didn't tell you that that's what that box three is called in the manual. It's called the misread ballot box. And the people knew that that's a box for misread ballots, and people didn't want to put their ballot in it because they didn't want to commingle their ballots with a bunch of ballots that are being misread, which like everything was that day. And like Michelle said, you know, why are we only concerned with the box three ballots? We should be concerned with every single ballot tabulated that day when we had machines that were sick, infected with something. And, you know, we're starting to get a better picture about what that is. Okay. But, you know, on that day, they gave options to the people, and the pundits were just saying, hey, you know, take a different option. So one of the options that they were given from the Board of Supervisors was to allegedly check out of a location and go to another location, but you can't really do that. There's no training for that. Anyway, they didn't want to do that. And Bill Gates was blaming the pundits, and he said, you know, that the people didn't want to use the misread ballot box was one of the, you know, he got upset. He said, this was the reason for some of the chaos last Tuesday, And then he went on to accept some of the responsibility himself, but he didn't want to accept all the, but there you have an admission. And we put this in court. Josh Barnett filed a suit yesterday. It's a declaratory judgment. And he was requesting a temporary restraining order or a preliminary injunction. And this was the first thing it starts with. I prepared the documents for him. I did the research, and he's submitting it pro se. And I'm going to touch on that in a minute, but the comment we started with is you have an admission from the chairman of the Board of Supervisors that it was chaos, the chaos last Tuesday. That's what he called it. He called it chaos. Now they want to go to certify an election that they themselves have caused chaos.
Wow. Let's stop right there. That's fascinating, and that is brilliant that you're using their words, that they're on record. Hey, you guys want to certify an election? You have described yourself in public in recordings as chaos, and yet you want to certify them. That's brilliant, Leo.
Well, I've been trying to scream from the rooftops for people to listen to me, and now I'm glad. Thank you for having me on and picking up on that, because your reaction is what everyone's reaction should be. I mean, you cannot have an election where the guy in the statutorily most responsible for the election, the election days under the statute are the responsibility of the Board of Supervisors. He's the chairman. And the fact of the matter is they were gaslighting us on that day when the people of Arizona, they were gaslighting them and saying everybody got to vote. Everybody had an opportunity to vote. Yeah, everybody had an opportunity to vote. So what? That doesn't mean everybody voted, got to vote. Doesn't mean everybody's vote counted. In fact, we will never know how many people didn't vote or weren't allowed to vote or their votes weren't counted. It's all an incredible guess. It's like you pour it out. You cannot put it back in the bottle now. We have laws for this. The statute says, you know, when there's misconduct, which is malfeasance or maladministration, and the precedent, the case precedent, Arizona Supreme Court, Finley versus Sorensen, if you have uncertainty as to the result, you can't be certain about the result, which we will never be certain about this result, you can have the election annulled. You know, there's under the statute for that.
And does the annulment allow you to have a redo?
It doesn't say, but it allows you to, quote unquote, set aside the election. Annulled means it's void. There is no election. What happens then? I don't know. I assume we do have to have a special election. Yeah, and I think that that's the just thing to do, okay? But that's under the contest statute 672, and every voter has standing after they declare a winner. So what Josh did, we came up with a procedure. We put a declaratory judgment to determine the he can't bring the contest until that's why the Abe Hamaday lawsuit was denied, because they brought it as a straight up election contest, and we brought ours as a declaratory judgment. And there's a controversy. He can't sue yet, but he can ask for a declaratory judgment as to whether or not the outcome is uncertain. And the declaratory judgment is a procedural device where you get to the substance of an issue without deciding the case. If you win the declaratory judgment, you get a judgment from the court. This election, according to Finley versus Sorensen, according to statutory law, there was misconduct. We can't determine. It's uncertain. And then you bring the contest, and the ruling in the declaratory judgment is res judicata in the contest. You make a motion for summary judgment. You win. Now, we're going to get to his case in a minute, but I want to get back quickly, because the problem with trying to go with the uncertainty is if the participation rate of the election is comparable to other years, okay, like they have right now at the Maricopa site. This is what started me on this journey with this inactive thing. On Thanksgiving, I was fooling around, and I this horrible thought in my head, like, if the participation rate is equal to like 2018, which was like a record high year, if we have a big problem, because you're not going to be able to really show that there was such a level of disenfranchisement that, you know, you couldn't figure out what the intent of the voters was and get to a reasonable certainty of who won these elections. You need to be able to show, and not just claim, you need to have some evidence, probative evidence, to show that a lot of people were disenfranchised. Okay.
Right.
So I went over there and I saw the numbers. They looked very proud of this number, 64.17% participation rate right now and for 2022 after the final canvas. And then they were comparing it to 2018, and I said, well, this is trouble. And so I went and looked, and first thing I saw is the number they had for 2018 was 65.5, but when I went into the official canvas, it was only 64.5. And I said, well, that's interesting. Why is that one number off? And I couldn't figure it out. So I started crunching the numbers because I was suspicious. I didn't think it was a typo, and I'm still not sure why it says on their front page 2018 was 65.5, and this we were 64.17 in 2022. And when the canvas for 2018 midterm actually says 64.449, which rounds off to 64.5, I started looking at the numbers, and I found something incredible. Like Michelle was saying, and this just blew my mind. For the 4-year mean, you see the way they get the participation rate, let me go there. They don't take the total registered voters, okay? They only use the total active voters, okay? Now, inactive voters are registered voters who can vote. There's been a problem with their address that the recorder's office has picked up on. They've been taken off or they haven't voted in a while, but they're still registered. They've been taken off the active list. They're put on the inactive list. And if they show up at the polls, you must allow them to vote. However, it's an intricate process how they get to vote. And it's, I think, messing with that process led to a lot of disenfranchisement. Going back to the numbers now, we have this incredible, unnatural progression of events I noticed in the numbers. For instance, you start in August, like the August primary in 2018, and you see they had active voters 2.229 million and inactive 269,000. And then by the general, they had 2,254,000, a little bit up. You have active voters going up from the primary to the general. And then inactive also went up from 269 to 302. Okay, that average, those kind of numbers continue where the fluctuation, like Michelle said, is between 220,000 and 300,000 for 4 years. Okay. And the active numbers, the active voters, of course, the population's growing, you know, it's going up every election. And by the time we get to, for instance, by the time we get to the general election in 2020, you have active voters in Maricopa at 2,595,000, and then you have inactive at 267,768. And then those numbers are very similar. By April, 2 years later, when the recorder does his report, you have 2.592 million active and you have 270,000 inactive. And so for 4 years, all of these numbers, active is just going up, or just going down a little bit here or there, 1,000, this, but usually just going straight up in a line on a graph. You'd see it going straight up. And inactive is fluctuating, 20,000 up, 30,000 down, between 220 and 300,000. But so, then we get to the general.
So let me interrupt you there so I make sure the audience is with me. Tell me the bottom line, what these numbers you believe are showing.
The bottom line is we all of a sudden, like a rocket ship, okay, inactive voters almost doubles between April and the general election. In 6 months, it goes from 278,000, 503,000. And active voters in 6 months leading up to this big election drop to 2,435,000 from 2,592,000. What is causing that's a 6.5% drop in active voters in the 6 months leading up to this election? It doesn't make sense, and it's just completely unnatural.
So you have inactive voters. So you have a drop in active voters, and you have a spike in inactive voters.
Like a rocket ship, like a spike, like nothing they've seen before. So and not only that, inactive voters are statewide. So there was an operation here, and you see 100% increase in inactive voters. And why is that important?
Okay, let me answer that question as a layperson. I mean, you're obviously a mathematician and very bright, but let me see if I'm right or wrong. Are you telling me that one reason you would do that is so that you could pull from the inactive list and vote for those people as you need those votes?
I'm not saying that right now. What I'm saying is the participation rate, when you divide, the way they get the participation rate is you divide the ballots cast, okay? Which in this one, the ballots cast was 1,562,000, right? So you divide that by the active voters to get the participation rate. And since you've just taken like 225,000 people off the inactive list, they've gone to off the active and gone to inactive, you have a much smaller number of active. And so you get that 64% because when you divide the ballots cast, all right, by the total active voters, the higher the number of total active voters, the smaller the percentage. With the lower number here, you get 64.17. But if you put those 225,000 inactive voters back on the active list, then you get a participation rate of 58%, which is 6 points off from 2018, which translates when you subtract that and you subtract that percentage of 6% and multiply it by the number of the adjusted theoretical active voters, you get approximately 153,000 voters missing and a potential ballpark figure for the disenfranchisement rate. And that's what I'm saying.
So you're saying you've got a potentially 153,000 disenfranchised voters.
That's right. And that's how if you go to court, you don't agree that there was 64%. You say in the 6 months leading up to the election, there was a statewide effort that was to reduce active voters in Maricopa County, especially, but the inactive voters, there's all over the state, like in every county almost, there's this push by every recorder's office to suddenly get the inactive numbers up. And what does that do? When those people then go to the polls, first of all, that helps them cook the numbers in the participation rate, right? Because if you have, for instance, the active voters in April was 2,592,000. So when you divide that number into the ballots cast, you get a much lower number in percentage. So when you take this reduced number, 2,435,000, you divide that into the ballots cast, you get the number they're looking for, 64.17. Then they can say, hey, there's no disenfranchisement. But they had to do this. They had to transfer, because we actually have almost 2.939 million registered voters for October 11th, that's the list right before the election. 2,939,000 registered voters. And they went on a frenzy to switch about 600,000. So there's only 2.4 on the active list, which lets them cook the number, the participation rate. And but when you re-examine this, and if we had a totally normal year like we have for the 4 years before, and we have the total normal numbers here and the regular thing, your participation rate is going to be 58%, and you're going to see a 6% drop off from 2018, which makes no sense and proves that people were disenfranchised in the 100 to 200,000.
Wow. What do you make of this, Michelle? Michelle, what do you make of what he's saying?
Well, it makes sense, right? Because they had to do different levels of nefariousness when they were going to be doing this election, because there were some obstacles that they ran into in the midterms. I mean, the fact that they were just separating ballots allowed them to then have the ballots isolated, which was that night. Now, if people remember, there was these black bags that showed up on the Monday after the election at the MTech Center, where they do the tabulation. No stickers were on them because we signed those security stickers, which is an adhesive deal. So all of a sudden they showed up 6 days later? Where were they for 6 days? They were supposed to be dropped off that night. So I mean, so you have the opportunity to use these inactive voters to place those. But then again, like we were saying with the machines, it just gives them another reason, because and Frank's speech and Mike Lindell, you know, $40 million later, he's been talking about this for 2 years. They can have phantom voters. They could use these inactive voters because the machines go ahead and can manipulate what they want. And then they have to have the papers to match them up. So it gives them a reason to go ahead and replace a person. Puzzle pieces that go together, because you have to have a ballot, fake or real, match with a person, fake or real, right? That's how it works. It has to be the same number. So let's just say there's a million of these. There's got to be a million of these. But if we isolate some of the ballots because we have these special bags, we did their work for them. We put them in misread file, which was door number 3. So then all of a sudden they put them in a ballot. Some were commingled because they wanted to take away from the narrative the duffel bags, right? Have you heard anybody talk about the bags being separated?
Other than here.
Right, because that's
okay,
the thing.
Can I jump in here for a second?
Yeah, mingling.
Yeah, right, go ahead, listen, Leo.
The stuff I'm saying is stuff you can see. You can just see it in the recorder's report. Like, we don't have to. The evidence I'm bringing to the court, this is right there in the recorder's report. We don't have to find any ballots or any bags. And I'm not saying that's not important. But what's very important is that these people were these. I don't know why it was so important to the recorder in the 6 months leading up to the election, why they're in a fury. He has to send 225,000 letters out by mail that's returnable, and they get 35 days, the person, to get in touch with them, okay? If they don't get in touch with them, they put them on the inactive list, but it's a burdensome process. And leading up into this election, I don't know what the frenzy is to get 225,000 people on the inactive list. I don't know why that's important to them, because these are people, they're not illegal voters, they're legal voters. But when they switch them to this list, something magical happens. Now listen to me. When the person shows up at the poll and they don't know they're inactive, nobody's told them that, they haven't got the letter or seen the letter. When they walk into that poll, they're not on the precinct list anymore. And then so there's a very specific process laid out in the manual, okay, and in the statute. And that poll worker has to then look on the inactive list and see if they're there. That's the next step. Michelle, did anyone train you to do that? Just a yes or no?
No.
Okay. Nobody trained her to do that. The word inactive is not in the manual. It's not even in the Maricopa poll training manual. Now, what happens? By law, they have to look in that inactive list. And then if they see the person there, they have to, the person has a way to cure that if they know the magic words. And the statute says that person can affirm before election official, they can affirm that they have not moved and they live at that same address. And if they do that, if they say the magic words and they affirm, they can vote a regular ballot. But if the poll worker doesn't know to tell them that, and even if they just show them a license or something, but they don't go to the election official, and in the statute it says they're an elector when they walk in, but they become a registrant and they have to follow these steps to cure their inactive status. And if they don't say the magic words and raise their right hand, so to speak, and affirm, then even if they prove their address without doing that, some malicious poll workers just say they didn't vote, or they just won't even tell them that because the manual doesn't put an affirmative duty on the poll worker to tell them their rights. Now, if they show up and they did move, there's a whole other process where the poll worker, now this is crazy, okay? But this is in the Katie Hobbs manual. The poll worker has to tell that person that they must go to their location where they have registered, the precinct there, even though we have this new vote center model. Katie Hobbs doesn't like that. So she wrote, that's what's in the statute too. Okay, so this myth that you can vote at any vote center, it's not true for inactive voters. They can't. So Katie Hobbs wrote in the manual, you have to tell them that they should go to the other location, but I want you to tell them, and I'm telling you, you must tell them they have a right to a ballot where they are, but that ballot will not count if they voted. So you have to tell them they have a right to a ballot, but that ballot will not count if they vote. You have a right to vote a ballot that won't count. You must tell them that and give them the option to vote. I mean, this is what's in the manual. And yet it's so confusing intentionally. You combine all of this madness and the poll worker has to be trained in all of this or the vote won't count. If that person walks in and the poll worker gives them the provisional and they're not at the location where their precinct is, and they've been told from everyone that this vote center model means you can vote anywhere, they vote the provisional there and it will not count. It's by law, it cannot count. But Katie Hobbs is telling them, you have the right to vote a ballot that doesn't count, although we have to tell you, you should go to the other location so you can make it count. And then the other people who actually can vote there and get a regular ballot, if they don't say abracadabra, they don't vote, they can vote. And then they could take their vote off later, which I see evidence of. Someone contacted me who's voted for 30 years in the same precinct, showed up, they let her vote, and now it says on the site she didn't vote and she's not registered. Okay? Now you combine this, the training necessary to deal with inactive voters, okay, with the fact that Michelle wasn't trained at all, the manual doesn't say the word inactive anywhere in it. Okay, and then you look at the numbers and see why they're on a frenzy to shove 225,000 people on the inactive list. And we've got a problem, Houston, a big problem. It looks like certain voters were the product of an intelligence operation. And I'm going to tell you that this is related to the thing they're calling the site book, which is the e-poll book you check in on. And nobody seems to know that this isn't by Dominion and this isn't some private company. This site book, which has all of your information, is under the control of the recorder's office. When Adrian Fontes was there, he designed it. His team designed the site book. They created some sort of weird software that's controlling the machines, the printers. It's called Sitebook with a capital S. Nobody's noticed that. And it's owned by the Maricopa County Recorder's Office. It's their own technology. And you don't hire politicians to build software to run elections. You get state-of-the-art software. But Adrian Fontes designed this, and it went ballistic in the primary in 2018. They had the same exact problems. They had the same exact problem, 62 centers, precincts down. They had a terrible problem there, and it was based on this site book. Nobody seems to know that that was his baby. They designed it. It's proprietary to them, and they are having... They had independent contractors on this. They have formed an election board where they put in temp workers to run the election. And the Maricopa Board of Supervisors has an agreement with the recorder's office. They have given control of the election to these, their non-merit-based employees that run this. And they get access to the polls. And I believe they are doing intelligence with that information. Nobody's supposed to get in that poll book except county officials, okay, and they know who's voting and they know what they're doing, and none of this is by coincidence. And by the way, the lawsuit we brought, I'm going to give you breaking news in a minute on that. There's a hearing scheduled, okay? The judges scheduled a hearing on Friday for Barnett versus Hobbs. They denied the temporary restraining order without notice, and they want us to give notice, and we're having a hearing on Friday. Katie Hobbs has to show up. The Board of Supervisors has to show up. Josh Barnett has to show up. I may or may not be admitted pro hoc vice. We'll see if they let me argue it. Each side gets 15 minutes.
Remind our audience who Josh Barnett is, please.
Josh Barnett ran for Congress. He was endorsed by a lot of people in the MAGA movement. He's a good guy. Everyone knows him in the community. He gave him a hell of a fight on $65,000 when he was going up against an incumbent with a lot of money and someone that jumped in with $5 million. And he was right on their coattails. And he's a good patriot, and he's a smart guy, and he understands what's happening, and he's fighting for your state and for America. We have a very dark situation here. His suit does not depend on intentional misconduct, but that's coming. We are finding out an intelligence operation is being run on the people of Arizona, and some of them are being allowed to vote, some of them aren't, and there's no proprietary software that can be cross-checked with some private company that's traded on a stock exchange. No, your site books, look at the name. It's a capital S. You know, it's it's been designed by your own recorder's office. They own it. Okay.
So what you're saying there, Leo, is they can't claim proprietary software. Therefore, we can't let you see it because you're saying it was designed by the taxpayer through the state. The state.
That's exactly correct. But nobody seems to know that.
Nobody when you say they, who is the they that you think did this?
The they that did this are the people that have the control of all of the equipment and the control of the election. Who else could do it? And the people that they've brought in. You see, since most people don't understand that in the statute, the recorder's office is responsible for early voting. Okay, they're responsible for early voting and keeping the registration rolls. The Board of Supervisors under your law, under the Arizona law, they're responsible for the election on election day. In 1955, the Board of Supervisors gave all of their power to the recorder's office. And up until 2019, it stayed that way. But they signed an agreement between the Board of Supervisors and the recorder's office in 2019. And they came up with this quasi-government board. They call it the election board. It's an election agreement where they're sharing the responsibility. And they have these two positions they brought in. And these two directors, one that's hired by the recorder and one that's hired by the Board of Supervisors, they're non-merit-based employees of the county, which basically means they're like temps, okay? And they get control and access to the voter rolls. And their people, they're not county officials the way elected officials, you know, the elected officials, the Board of Supervisors, the recorder, they're supposed to be running the election. They've given their authority to these temps, whoever they are, and they are running the elections, and they're using proprietary software that's their own software, and they know exactly how it ticks because they designed it. And the first time they used it was they used it in judicial elections right before the primary in 2018. Then they used it in the primary in 2018. And you remember, you'll find articles where Fontes is blaming the company, the contractor he brought in to work the site books. And everyone seemed to think Insight is the name of the company, that they were responsible for the site picks. But no, they were brought in for some reason to work the site books and set them up. And it was a total failure in the August primary in 2018. And there was all this blame placed. And somehow their name's Insight. The name of the thing is site book. And people didn't understand and don't understand now that the site book is owned by the recorder's office. They own it, and they own every catastrophe that comes from using it.
Okay, let me stop right there for a minute. When you say the recorder's office, are we talking about a one state office? Or are we talking about the recorder's office in every county?
Well, in Maricopa, it's the recorder where this happened. It's the recorder's office of Maricopa County, which is occupied by one Stephen Richer right now. And he has a lot more responsibility hit for election day than he lets on.
Okay? Now, but are all the recorders throughout the state using the same software?
No, they are not. Most of them are using, a lot of them are using 10X. I don't believe anyone's using Sitebook except for Maricopa.
So are you telling me then, again, I'm just a lay guy asking questions. Are you telling me that the whole steal was for the whole state was basically orchestrated with one county, Maricopa County, which I think is your biggest voting county in the whole state? So are you telling me the whole rig, the whole steal was done in Maricopa County through this system?
I'm saying that's how they did the most damage here, but we're seeing, when you look at the numbers, the same increase in inactive voters in Maricopa, this insane 100%. It's statewide from April to the lead up to the election in almost every
county.
But
wouldn't that tell you? But wouldn't that tell you then that there's something running other than just that piece of software in that recorder's office in Maricopa County? That has to be some software running in those other counties too. And what is that software?
I think that's when you go to Jay Valentine's article. I think he put his finger on it from American Thinker today. That with the zip codes, I think that makes sense to me. How they may have done this. Is that article that you put on the screen earlier, it explains what they did with the zip codes. And when that mail doesn't come back to the recorder's office, they throw you on the inactive list. Then you have a much harder time voting. Okay. Now I'm not saying that they stole those votes and gave them to someone else. I'm saying those people would have a very hard time voting in Maricopa County. And if you have let's say, malicious partisan people at the polls or people like Michelle that weren't trained, they won't know what to do. And along the line, as long as those people that run the site books know which ones were on the inactive list, they can go and look and get information from the election boards at each site and find out, did this person come to you? Did they affirm? Did they use the words, I affirm my address? Or did they just show you a license? Did they do that? Or did they vote? Because if they voted and they didn't affirm, we can cancel their vote in the system. And this person, did they put a provisional in here? Well, that provisional doesn't count. You told them, right? You told them if they voted the provisional, they had a right to vote it here, but it didn't count. You told them that? We don't have to count it. You see, this is like, This is, you know, it's an Orwellian nightmare.
It is. It absolutely is. Let me drill down a little bit, make sure I understand this, because it sounds like you're onto something with that recorder's office in Maricopa County and this software that you say is proprietary to Maricopa County. But when you talk, what's that?
Sitebook. Okay. Capital SITE, capital BOOK.
Okay. So then when we move outside of Maricopa County and you're talking about this database latency, that sounds like then you have to have something else that you're controlling this with. Have you been able?
At that point, those same people will run into the same problem. And we don't know how many recorders are in on this sting. It's a sting on people who are patriotic people that have voted in every election and shouldn't be on the inactive list. But there's a certain amount of them. They know how they're going to vote. They're being targeted.
But that means you're going to have to find some other recorders, probably, like you've done in Maricopa County, correct?
Well, Maricopa is such a huge part of the state. I mean, if you prove it in Maricopa.
So in other words, if you prove it in Maricopa County, that's enough it. Because it's the biggest
that's
voting
enough.
County in the state. But
right. And that's not the only thing they did. There's a very important mistake that they have in the manual. You see, by law and by the statute and the election procedures manual, each voter is allowed 3 regular ballots. Okay. So on a day like you have this disaster, you can get a ballot, spoil it, get another one, try again. And they told you there was a printer error. So if you only get 2 ballots, you have a certain percentage. An extra ballot will give you 33% better chance of getting it through. The day they needed this extra ballot the most, the Maricopa County manual says they only get 2 ballots. Now you check every other county, their manual, it's correct with the statute, with the Secretary of State Election Procedures manual, you get 3 regular ballots. And if after 3 attempts through the machines, it doesn't work, you could put it in box 3, but technically that should only happen to a couple of people. And like Michelle said, there's a statute, okay, 16 ARS 16-574, that tells you when the machines go bad, you're supposed to repair them or replace them. So you shouldn't have people checking into sites with bad machines. Okay?
Which she told us was 25 to 40% of the ballots, and that right? Where you
well,
were.
Well, yeah, I would say it was 40 at the end of the day, but in the beginning it was 90, then it was 80-20. The machines magically got better with no one doing anything to them.
We can't know. We can't know. Nobody can know. They haven't given official thing. Liddy, their attorney, just came out and he said, you know, he said there was 31% of ones with printer issues. That's like 71. But they said at least 60 centers with issues, not printer issues. So there's no ceiling on the number they've given us. It could be issues at 223.
Okay, I got 2 minutes left. This is fascinating. Okay. I got 2 minutes left and I got a hard out. So tell me, Leo, now you filed this, and Barnett versus Hobbs, when is the first hearing?
The hearing is on Friday at 11:30 a.m.
Will we be able to watch it and record it?
I can't tell you that now. I'm not sure. It is a video conference hearing, but I just want to say, you know, the other suits, they haven't got a hearing. They tossed Abe Hamaday's suit out. They said it was premature. To avoid that problem, we came up with a declaratory judgment. I don't know what's going to happen. It's a return hearing.
Can you find out if we can, Michelle, can you find out if we can get an audio or video either live or after the fact? And because we're going to want to report on this. So let me get this right. Are you saying that at 11:30 a.m. Friday, December 2nd, Arizona time, this will get a hearing? Is this where it will be accepted as a lawsuit or thrown out? What happens?
The hearing is on the preliminary injunction. We put a temporary restraining order without cause. That means without having to give them notice. That was denied, and they asked Josh to give notice. He's giving notice. He may have done it already. The hearing is set for Friday. Each party gets 15 minutes to argue the hearing. And so it's on the preliminary injunction. And then the main case is the declaratory judgment. So we'll see what happens. But they're going to have to show up and answer somewhat to the arguments.
And who is the they? Who's the they? Maricopa County officials?
The Secretary of State, but really the Board of Supervisors is the one. The Secretary of State is just waiting there, and we're trying to restrain her from certifying the election. We want an injunction so we can have our trial on the declaratory judgment, and she won't certify the election or declare a winner, which will create – that creates presumptions of correctness in the outcome, which is the irreparable damage that Josh is facing if they declare the winner.
But it's going to have to be the Maricopa County supervisors that defend this in court on Friday.
Yes. I don't imagine that. I don't know what the Secretary of State, they're not her involvement. I don't know what her involvement is, because we have a statewide jump in the inactive voters. And I don't know if it was coordinated by the Secretary of State or not. I don't know, but it is statewide, and it is a statistical anomaly. And statisticians who are professional will look at this and go, wow, I cannot believe what I'm seeing. It's not natural. It's absolutely catastrophic event.
Fascinating. Leo. Great job, Leo. We want updates. Great job as well. Thanks. Also, Michelle, thank you to both of you. Yeah. Incredible program. We'll get it replayed. We'll follow up. We'll stay on this. That's the Lindell Report, Brandon House, in for Mike Lindell, who's out on business. Remember, keep this broadcast going. Keep Mike's work going. Keep this network going. And you get something in return. Do the bulk of your Christmas shopping at MyPillow.com. Use that promo code L77 to save up to 90% while the Cyber Monday sale has been extended through the week. Thanks for watching. I'm Brandon House. Take care.
You're watching.